Discussion with Ajahn Suchen at the Rose Garden, Bangkok, Thailand, November 1993. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Jonathan, Sarah, Nina, Ludovic, Ivan, and Pina, and also Klaus Achara and an Indian friend.
Understanding, we cling, and we also have wrong view of taking it for something permanent.
Sometimes we cling to something, even though we might know better and have right understanding.
Right. That's why I say that whenever there is wrong view, there must be clinging to such view.
Yes.
And sometimes one clings, but without wrong view.
Yes.
So which one is better?
Of course, with the right view.
Yeah, or without wrong view.
Without wrong view.
So in other words, when you're clinging, you're having understanding, but it's wrong understanding. But then once
there are wrong understandings.
Yeah.
Many wrong understandings. Mm-hmm. Like taking absolute realities for something permanent, or believing in creator or something like that, no cause, no result at all.
Mm-hmm.
But right understanding is right understanding of this moment of reality which appears now.
Well,
this
right.
is right understanding. And all the teachings of Buddha concerned about
right
realities, right understanding.
But if you had right understanding, this would in turn dispel whatever you're clinging to, right?
Little by little, not instantly or immediately.
So, but the right understanding would be essential in the moment for dispelling the
wrong understanding.
But for that instant, it could be dispelled, wouldn't it?
Little by little, very little. For example, now we're talking about seeing. We are talking about the arising and falling of seeing, but no direct experiencing of the arising and falling way of seeing yet. So one knows that there must be another level of understanding which has to develop first before one can get to that moment which can experience directly the arising and falling away. But it falls away for sure. This moment is not previous moments at all. But this is only thinking. Conventional thought about realities, not directly experience it yet. But when we talk about the enlightenment of Buddha, it doesn't mean that he just thought about this, but he had really experienced realities as they are.
Right.
So he could teach correctly about realities, while the others might just think about right or wrongly, we don't know. But when this moment of directly experiencing cannot be wrong. And it's not only thinking, not only intellectual level.
But if you really had the right understanding, it would automatically sort of either slowly or gradually just dispel any clinging or any kind of attachments or illusions.
Completely or absolutely, instantly.
Not absolutely or instantly, but gradually. It doesn't happen very quick like that.
Impossible.
Maybe once in a while?
What degree?
What? Well, like
what
when,
level?
Say you get an insight.
What level of insight?
A deep insight, say.
Many levels too. Even it's deep insight, there are many levels.
Yeah. Okay. What about the observer? You know, there's no real observer watching all this.
Awareness.
Awareness would be the observer.
A mental factor.
The process of awareness would be the observer.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we ourselves are not a single thing. We are two things, actually. One is we are a doer. We are doing things, you know. Okay, we say we are doing things. Our duties, daily functions, so we are doer. But in us, there is one more thing, the awareness. That is observer. The observer is watching what we are doing.
How many moments?
Observer is watching what we are doing.
Yeah, how many moments?
Yeah, for that moment.
Many moments.
Let us see, everything is going on like we don't know it's going on, but it's going on anyway. You know, the life is made up of moments anyway. The life is made at the moment, so we break it in.
Yes.
And then, now what I'm doing, that awareness in me know what I am doing. So what happened? The clinging, this is a what we do today is like because we have a clinging, we have attachment. I came here because I have attachment. Though I want to clean myself of the attachment, but still I came here because I have attachment. Is it so? Why should I come here? So there is awareness inside that is watching me, that is watching me, my actions, my clingingness, my attachment, what I'm doing. Whether right or wrong. I come here, the awareness watching me. In the evening, I can go to the club. Again watching me.
I can understand why we all want to get rid of attachment and clinging. But I wonder whether a better goal would be to get rid of ignorance.
Right. Yeah.
Because if we have as our goal getting rid of ignorance, in other words, developing understanding, rather than getting rid of clinging, then the eradication of clinging should follow as a matter of course, and we wouldn't have to think about how we could get rid of our attachment more quickly.
Yeah.
But we see the attachment and we recognize it as being something that is not useful and is harmful, and of course we want to get rid of it. What we don't see is the ignorance, which of course is a condition for the attachment in the first place.
Yeah, we are ignorant because we are not in a situation, a position to analyze sometime between wrong and right.
When you talk about watching what we are doing and watching when I go to the club and when I come here, it sounds like you have the idea of something of a whole. It sounds like no idea of anatta, of not self, of realities at this moment. Because what is now? Now is not someone coming here or going there or being in Bangkok. These are just ideas. We have concepts. We live in a world of concepts. But the reality at this moment is seeing and hearing and attachment and ignorance. So these are the realities that awareness has to be aware of. But it's not self, it's not someone who can be aware. As Khunsa Chin was saying, awareness is a mental factor. So if we have the idea that we are aware of watching us going to the club and doing certain actions, it's all with the idea of someone or self who is doing these things.
Yes. Right.
As soon as we say we should, immediately it's the idea of someone or self who can control or who can be aware. In reality, there's no we who can or should do anything. There are realities arising at this moment that awareness can be aware of. So maybe rather than thinking of what we should do, it's more important
just
to
watch it.
Even if we talk about watching, it's like the idea of someone or the observer watching. What about instead understanding more about the characteristics of the realities at this moment, so that we understand more clearly what awareness has to be aware of?
That is the ideal goal, that not only observing but actually analyzing it. Just cool down a bit and just sit down and why we are doing it, analyze it.
But even if we talk about analyzing, it's like thinking about it, or it's like someone concentrating or doing something. But if we understand more clearly at this moment, there's hardness or seeing. These are realities. We don't need to analyze it. We don't need to do anything because there's no we who can do anything. But by knowing more precisely what our life is at this moment, it's like Khunsa Chin said, if we talk about doing something and going somewhere, and many, many moments, these are not realities. The reality is the seeing now, the hardness now, the hearing now. So these are the realities that need to be understood more precisely, not by us analyzing or observing or doing anything. So I think it's more useful to perhaps ask Khunsa Chin to explain more about the realities now, so that we know more precisely what awareness can be aware of. Otherwise we always have the idea of an observer or someone watching.
Well, we have come to learn here. But whatever we have got experiences, whatever we have thought before about Tama, I mean, we try to express ourselves. But of course, we will learn.
I have listened that you told us that our inside have something called the knower. Right? The knower is aware of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, or even what you are thinking, right? And this element, you maybe call it a knower, but the instructor said that there's no knower. Can you give us more detail about that knower?
The knower?
Yeah.
The observer?
Yeah, the observer, yeah.
Okay.
Someone who's always observing
yeah.
you. What is it? How do you know?
You see,
it's not the eye, it's something inside.
Yeah, it's something different.
Through your eyes.
Something,
yeah.
It's something different. You see, as I told, we are inside of us is two things. One is the doer,
yeah.
like a physical body does
yeah.
things. The second thing is a person sitting in us
yeah.
who is registering these events. So he is the one who registers it, and he tells us that you are doing it. The main thing is Atma, soul.
So
in this case, you can say soul is the observer, which is watching all the time.
Yeah.
Though you are not following the soul,
yes.
which is inside your body, but that soul is watching all the events you are performing.
And how some kind of like observer in the Abhidhamma? No observer in the Abhidhamma.
Not at all. Because
also in Abhidhamma, what is do the function of observing or awareing or watching or something, and not the eye, that's the same idea, but what is the inside element that do the function of something like the function of the observer?
But how do you know that is inside element? How do you experience or how do you know?
Yeah.
It's only thinking concept about something inside. Like there is really something inside.
So what elements, I can use another word, follow the right thinking. The thinking is a kind of function of the mind, but since it's no citta, no mind, no observer, no watcher, something like that, so the function is still wrong.
Yeah, it's going on unconsciously.
Yeah.
It's going on all the way. Unconsciously.
No,
you know it or not, don't know it. It's
yeah.
okay. It's going on.
So since the function is gone, so what's it the function doer?
But what performs that function?
How can we know that this is the right one?
It's only thinking that something is performing.
Who thinks, yeah?
Thinking.
Right.
At this moment of seeing, there's no thinking about the inside or the outside.
Yeah.
At moment of seeing, it's impossible to have thinking together with seeing. And next moment, at moment of hearing, there is no something inside.
But supposing we assume it, that there is someone, as our friend has questioned, there is someone knower, someone observer, that we got to see it. We got to observe it the same time we do it. See, be something, but okay, seeing it is an event. Okay, I see a leaf, a tree. Okay, now there is an observer, say, okay, you have seen the tree. That's all.
Right or wrong?
Right or wrong doesn't matter.
No. I mean that.
Right or wrong doesn't matter.
No one can judge, right? Because reality is reality, and no one can change reality from one reality to another reality, too. Because. Reality arises and falls away.
It depends on what kind of reality we are talking about. Reality, as a matter of fact, is, if you talk about the absolute reality, of course, it is only one. But out of absolute reality, everything is a relative reality. Everything is relative.
Sapetang mangananta.
Right.
Means there's no absolute truth.
It's, yeah.
Everything relative.
Everything is relative.
Excuse me. If there is no realities at all, can there be thinking?
No, there is a reality. Reality, relative reality. One reality finishes giving birth to another reality. The second reality finishes giving birth to the third reality.
And how
That's
many
all.
Realities?
But there is an absolute truth.
Yeah.
That is, there is undoubted, there is an absolute truth, absolute reality. There is only one. But out of this, yes. After this, everything is unreal. Everything is relative, real or unreal. That's all.
What is unreal about hardness, if it appears at the present moment?
Yeah. What is hardness? Science never say anything is hard. Either it's harder or softer. You can't say hard. You
don't
can't
have
say
to
hard.
Ask, because everyone experiences hardness, like everyone can experience heat and cold.
Yeah.
But if it appears, it's real at that moment, surely.
No, the appearance means it could be apparent. It could not be a real thing. You know, apparent is apparent. Okay.
Sorry.
Appear means it just appear like that. An appearance can give you a wrong perception. You can see something. It appear to something else. It can appear to me something else.
Well, that's because they're different realities. Though.
Yes. That is why this is all relative reality.
It's a different reality.
We are actual.
For each person,
we should disagree to agree on one point, that our approach is different. That how I observe or how I perceive something may not be the same as you perceive the thing. But we are striving hard to find out what is ultimate reality. What is? Though we are observing today, but we would like to know the ultimate reality.
But I think that is at the moment of seeing.
Yeah, of course, starting from seeing.
Yes, but the idea and concept comes after seeing moment. So that's why there are many, many concepts, many.
Well, we have to start. Yeah. What we see, that is a beginning, that is a point we have to start from.
When we talk about the absolute reality, it's so very common to everyone.
It's what?
Very common to everyone.
Very common.
Yes. Yeah. Anyone can prove and try to understand the moment of seeing, to understand better about the true nature of seeing when one uses the term anatta or anattaness. It shows that there is no one, no self,
yeah,
no
ananda,
being in
no
it.
Ending. Yeah.
No being.
No being.
No thing in it. Because it's conditioned, so it arises and it falls away instantly. That's why nobody can say or take seeing as I see. Only wrong view will say that I see. But right understanding knows that it's just a moment of a reality which is conditioned. When there are right conditions.
Yeah. So that's a good word you talked, condition.
Condition.
Yeah. Because, you know, what is conditioning is that it is away from the truth. It's not real.
Why?
No, when we say it's hard, it appears to be hard. But once we get aware that it has been conditioned like that, so we say this is a momentary. It has been conditioned to be appeared like that. Okay?
Yeah. Not only appear, right. It is like that.
It is like that. Okay.
Yes,
it is like
but
that.
Only at that moment.
Yeah, at that moment. Yeah, that's right.
And
okay.
Afterwards, it can disappear.
No, here I agree on this. Okay, it has been conditioned. All right, no problem. So that is again, relativeness comes into picture. It could be a condition means relativeness. That we put some condition into it, and so it is like this because it is conditioned like this. All right.
We don't put the condition. The condition.
No, whether I put it or someone put it, it doesn't matter because it is just how to say.
One thing here is that, you know, this rising, you know, and existing and falling away is a permanent thing. It's maybe what one might call an absolute truth. Now, what I wonder from this point is that, you know, in a lot of our, like in tying it into your point of ignorance, one of the problems I see that in attachments and many other problems of life is the fact that we attach to things and have suffering, and hence this is caused by ignorance. Now, one of the things that in the meditation, I've been in many courses at Swan Monk and 10-day things and all that, and one of the things, as well as Goenka, and one of the things they tried to get into our minds, understanding, if you will, was this impermanence thing. And we were supposed to, you know, observe this in our bodies, in our breathing, in our moods, and everything else, so that we would experientially feel this impermanence.
Too
late to meditate? Why? Because we're going to die? Or
why not now?
What?
Why not now? Understand reality now.
I see. So why do all the meditation when you can get it right now?
We don't have to use the word meditate. We don't have to use the word meditate because the goal talking now is understanding reality which appears directly, not just talk about seeing and hearing without understanding in the true nature of seeing and hearing.
So by doing this, we would get at the root cause of ignorance. By
having understanding, it will eliminate ignorance little by little.
Yeah.
Because the function of right understanding is eliminating ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can eliminate ignorance except right understanding.
And the right understanding would be a process rather than doing something.
Little,
I mean, rather than
the
doer, an ego doing
little.
It. It would be just a process doing it. Like if I were fishing, I'd be fishing, but not the fisherman. I'd be doing the right understanding, but I wouldn't be there.
Some people want to develop a lot of awareness and want to meditate and do a lot of things, but without really understanding what the reality is to be aware of. So in other words, if one doesn't know exactly what is reality at this moment, if one has the idea that one's being aware of doing something, or one has the idea of self, there can't be any awareness developing whether one's here or in the meditation center or wherever. So the first thing is to understand very clearly, intellectually in the beginning, what exactly realities are, so that understanding can develop no matter whether one's in the meditation room or whether one's here at this moment. But when she says it's too late, I think what she means is at this moment we're here. The realities which are arising now are conditioned already. So what about, can there be awareness at this moment? Can there be understanding developing at this moment? Can we begin to understand more clearly how realities are not self now without waiting for another time? Sometimes people want to talk a lot about understanding impermanence, but how can there be understanding of impermanence of realities if there isn't any understanding of the realities in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about understanding the impermanence of seeing and hearing, but they don't know exactly what seeing and hearing is. So in the beginning, one has to know the true characteristic of those realities and begin to understand how they are not self, they are conditioned realities with no observer or doer, and that is the way the understanding can develop more and more precisely, deeper and deeper, so that it will eventually understand the impermanence of those realities, not by doing something or going to a special place, but by beginning to understand those realities at this moment, because there's no other moment.
Mm-hmm. But somehow or another, I feel that my experience in meditation has helped me to understand her, for example, a lot more, and what she's saying. You know, in terms of, we had Dhamma talks and meditation talks. So what you're saying, I can pick up a lot easier than if I just walked in with no Buddhist, you know, or meditation background.
But not after hearing.
Not before
hearing about the realities.
Yeah.
A keyword, reality, understanding is, I think, the keyword.
Yeah, reality, understanding.
I have some question. Is there any relation about mind and understanding? One. And is there mind in Abhidhamma? If no mind, so no relation with mind. Because what understanding? Understanding is concerned with your mind and your language to help you going through something. That is called understanding.
Sarah.
A relation, the mind and the understanding. If the mind, please explain.
Our friend just told that to understand really intellectually, know what is intellectuality and how to go after it, that is the important thing.
Well, like I just said, or like Khunsu Chin, I'm sure, has been talking about all morning, first of all, one has to know what is reality at this moment. Because we live in a world of concepts and dreams, and we confuse the realities and the concepts all the time. Like, you know, when we think about going off and doing something, we think this is realities, but these are just stories, concepts. So we have to know what are the realities first. And in the beginning, we have to get our ideas straight intellectually so that it can develop deeper. When we talk about the mind, there are many different mental states, that each moment is a moment of consciousness. So when we just talk about mind conventionally, it's an idea we have, but I think it's more useful to talk about namas and rupas. Nina can explain very clearly about namas and rupas.
But do you use mind to understand things?
A moment of consciousness, not a mind of states. Because a mind, a soul, so you think of it stays and it is not true. Because seeing is mind, but it falls away.
Hearing
is mind, but it falls away. It experiences, mind experience.
My experience.
There are many kinds of minds.
Yeah.
So we like to use the word citta. And it falls away, it is impermanent, but it is real. We cannot say what falls away or just for a moment is not real. It is real, but only for a moment.
Well, I wonder too, I just had a thought that maybe if we really get this right understanding, and it defeats our ignorance, and hence our clinging and our attachments, that this will make us something like other living beings. Where we won't be suffering from our mind so much, our mental, whatever, you know, minds, worries, clinging, all that sort of stuff. Because our attachments will be dispelled, our suffering will be dispelled a lot. And we'll be like a butterfly floating by, it's in peace, you know, or a deer walking through the forest, you know, it doesn't have a bunch of clinging and, you know, problems hitting it, you know. And maybe, in this sense, maybe we're by doing this, we're becoming more ecocentric, more ecologically in tune and natural with the environment, with Dharma. Could you buy that?
Do you really want to dispel attachment?
What?
Do you really want to dispel attachment?
Do I really want attachment?
Do you want
dispel?
What?
Released from attachment.
Yeah, I think so, right.
Now?
Yeah.
Now?
What?
Now?
Now?
Moment.
Yeah, okay.
From
right.
Good food?
What?
From good food.
From good food.
Good food? Oh, well.
We have to be sincere, that is the thing. We have to be
sincere. Well, animals like good food, so I guess, but I could probably...
Attachment is attachment. It doesn't belong to animal kingdom or human being. Attachment is attachment.
No, actually, we are talking about attachment in a different sense now. You see, attachment, if there is no attachment, there is nothing we can do in the world.
Arahata can teach.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, we are born with the all these, the kilet, or whatever you say. And we are born to do certain things to give, certain things to gain. We are born empty-handed, we will go back empty-handed. But between these two ends, we have to act as a human being. And as a human being, I don't think anyone can say that I have no attachment. Now your question is, do you dispel the good food? You said, no, it's okay, fine. Because it is not attachment. Eating is a normal attachment. We cannot get rid of that.
Yeah, but if I thought about eating all the time.
Right, that is excessive. Say, in Buddhism they say, you have to adopt, while you are in this world, you should act naturally. And naturally the animals eat, so we have to eat the same way.
I think the point I get from your story about the Buddha stopping eating and then resuming was that you can cut the eating, but it doesn't get rid of the attachment. Just because you reduce the attachment doesn't mean that you would stop eating, on the other hand.
Right, that's right.
Because, so it's not the overt act that one is concerned with of cutting out eating because now we eat and we have only with attachment, therefore we need to reduce our eating. But it's the attachment that is the unwholesome,
aspect, right,
that one wishes to get rid of. But that doesn't mean that we wouldn't be able to carry on life as normal, but with less attachment.
Right. Attachment as a duty, not attachment as a kind of excess feeling or excess something I can't stay without it, I have to do this, I must get it, not like that. But attachment as a form of normal duty, that is perfectly all right. Am I right?
Getting back to your point, sometimes people have the idea when they hear about the Dharma that if there is some development of understanding or insight, that suddenly there will be a transformation in character or lifestyle, or like you said before, if there is understanding that the danger is attachment, then it will be got rid of. But I don't think it works like that. Life carries on the same attachments, the same ignorance. If there is a moment of wisdom, a moment of insight, it's for a moment only. And at that moment, the mind is free, free from unwholesomeness, free from attachment for an instant. And then afterwards, more attachment. Because as Kunsu Chin said, if we're honest with ourselves, do we really want to be rid of attachment now? We may think so because we hear that, or we know in theory it causes our problems, but then we see something pleasant, attachment immediately. So understanding develops, or insight develops very gradually, many, many moments of unwholesomeness, one moment of insight or wisdom, but that's the way it can grow gradually, by understanding what is useful and what is useless. So it's not a matter of understanding that attachment is dangerous and then having no more attachment.
Mm-hmm. So it would be specific, but then so this would carry over. Like if you brought right understanding to one situation, there'd be supposedly, I think, something left over for the next, right?
Well, again, it'd be very nice if we could bring it, but of course the reality is we can't bring it, we can't control it.
So maybe it would be like the practice, like say I play tennis, okay? Mm-hmm. And I learn a good stroke, a good backhand, okay? Mm-hmm. Now every backhand, or you know, tennis,
every moment
coming
of
at
good
me,
backhand,
it's going to be different.
Uh-huh.
But I still have learned the backhand,
mm-hmm.
So I can hit the backhand better, and each time I keep practicing my backhand. It's the stroke, the process that I've learned, and so hence I can hit a better backhand. And could this follow through that I'd get more right understanding the more I start right understanding things?
Exactly.
And getting wisdom.
It can accumulate. And just like, you know, maybe the problem with your tennis is that your backhand is weak,
yeah.
And that what is good is would be helpful would be a good backhand. But in the same way, you know, we know the problem is so much ignorance, so little understanding, but
yeah.
We need to hear and consider a lot so that it can grow, but slowly. It's not a matter of one day having all attachment and the next day having all wisdom. It's still going to be most of our life is full of unwholesomeness, even if we've heard and considered a lot. And so like you said before, maybe there's attachment to a particular object and it causes a lot of pain or suffering, and we know the attachment is the problem. Maybe there's one moment of insight and one is free for that moment, but then even though one knows in theory it's so useless, so many more moments of attachment because it's conditioned like that. But beginning to understand the difference and the value of that moment of understanding.
Once that moment occurs, though, one would automatically be in better shape for handling other attachments and other moments.
Yes, but is there a direct relationship between developing some understanding and the perceptible eradication of attachment? I'm not sure that necessarily follows, because it possibly one may develop understanding for a long time and there not be any perceptible change in the strength of one's attachment. That's why it seems to me that the goal ought to be understanding rather than the eradication of attachment, the lessening of attachment. If we have confidence that understanding is what brings about in the longer term the eradication of attachment, it doesn't matter that initially we still eat as much as before or have the same sorts of strong desires. And I don't think there's any knowing in what way various attachments will be moderated by development of understanding, and I don't think we need to worry about it. If we are developing understanding, then it helps us to see more clearly what brings about cause and effect in other aspects of our life.
But this right understanding, we know sort of in the impermanence aspect, for being in the instant, so theoretically might have it, right? But like maybe somebody would know, you know, backhand theoretically. So what?
But in tennis,
really
in tennis
be,
we
practice,
can
right?
We can target the backhand and just practice on the backhand because it's our weak spot. But I don't see how we could expect to have the same approach if it comes to understanding in life,
right,
which is really what we're talking about.
Right.
We may want to have less of a particular kind of attachment.
Yeah.
But the reason why it's so strong in the first place is that it's strongly and firmly fixed as part of our accumulation and makeup and personality. It's been accumulated, it's been developed, just like good qualities may have been developed, also bad qualities have been developed in the past, and that's why they appear so strong now. So we shouldn't expect to be able to have any startling effect on these things from the outset, or to target one and say, I'd like less of that.
But the very fact that one with right understanding and right awareness and so forth be able to bring some insight and help, or, you know, little by little, would be beneficial to further problems of the past. They would be easier to solve, or you'd have more background if you wanted to use it to release.
It may mean that one saw more clearly different kinds of attachment that one has.
But not necessarily to do something about it.
Well, isn't that doing something about it? First, one has to understand the problem.
Yeah, right.
Again, the gross attachment, if you like, or whether it's attachment or anger or whatever, in its gross form, it's easy to see. But that's like the top of the iceberg. What about all the subtle attachment and irritation and other gilesas, other unwholesome qualities we have that we're not aware of in a day? Wouldn't it be useful to know more about any moment of our daily life, to see more clearly all the aspects that make this up?
But this might take 100 years.
Well,
it may take longer.
Why would it take 100 years? Why would it take 100 years? Because it's such a hell of a task. But that doesn't mean that it's any less worthwhile starting on it.
Yeah. Okay. The process.
At the moment.
Right. Like, I'm not going to save the environment as an environmentalist, but I can try. Okay. Right? Is that what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Maybe the task is like trying to save the environment.
I suppose it's like, if you want to use that analogy, if every person does their bit, it has an overall effect. If one person wants to save the environment on his own, he hasn't got a chance because the task is so huge. Mm-hmm. So likewise, with, you said it's a task that takes 100 years, but it doesn't really matter how long it's going to take or where we start for that matter, because sooner or later, if we see that attachment has to be overcome in the long run, then any attachment, weak or strong, that is seen and understood, that we're aware of, is a step in the right direction. So I suppose it's a case of treading the right path rather than trying to see the immediate results.
Process.
Development.
Yeah.
I have a different view of attachment. I think we can help you in 1 minute. To my idea, I have a three kind of attachment. First, the physical attachment. I think this is natural, right? You have to eat food. We started to detach from food or something like that. But physically, we have detachment might have two kinds too. The right understanding attachment and the wrong understanding attachment. If you select good food, good food is very clear. If you select clean food, you have a proper or right understanding.
Not going to be Buddha in 100 years.
I think just to understand now, even if it's only in theory, that the attachment, which is so dangerous or pernicious or deadly, if just to understand intellectually in the beginning that it is conditioned, it's not self, it's not me, it's not my attachment, but it's a mental state arising for a moment that is conditioned. No one can stop it, no one can change it, it's conditioned, it has to be like that. To me, that, you know, it's a big relief just to know that it is. Nothing can be done about it. It's conditioned like that. Why do we mind so much about it? Usually the reason we mind so much about it is because of the unpleasantness it brings, and we want to get rid of the unpleasantness. So again, it shows the strong clinging. And as Khun Su Chin said, if there's no seeing or hearing at this moment, can there be any attachment? So one needs to know what seeing is and how the seeing conditions attachment immediately. As soon as we open our eyes, there's attachment. It's a condition like that. No one can change it. No one can stop it. But understanding can develop, can begin to understand its nature, not by trying to change it or do something about it, but by beginning to recognize it and understand its nature. And I think that's a very good start. Back to what you said about if you haven't been to the meditation center, you wouldn't be able to appreciate what she said. It doesn't matter if one hears or considers something useful. It doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter if it's at home or in the meditation center or here. But it's the hearing and the considering and beginning to understand what is right and what is wrong, what is useful and what is useless. You know, that is a way the understanding can develop. So maybe there were conditions for you to hear and consider many times before you came here, and that's the reason that some of the things make some sense. So it's not the time or the place, but it's the beginning to consider, the beginning to understand intellectually in the beginning, so that the understanding can then grow deeper.
To relate to that, but I wonder sometimes, you know, as a human being, very difficult to do this type of stuff, and again, I still sort of, you know, I'm sort of a Buddhist, you know, but I still believe in God, you know, and it seems to me that if one sort of opens up, you know, releases a lot of the and gets into right understanding, where one is not supposedly bound with illusion and so forth, that call it what you want, God, Dhamma. And, you know, Buddha Das thinks Dhamma is God, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But that the Dhamma or God or higher power, or whatever you want to call it, would be able more to flow through the process.
Yeah, I think I agree on you, but I have some reservations. As our friend pointed out, that we have to understand the reality of at the moment, reality at the moment, what is this? Thailand is full of the people who do meditation every day, and they feel very, very good. And that is the whole philosophy of the meditation, is that you should feel very good. And they have experience telling about how they feel after they have meditated for 1 hour. And certain people are practiced meditators, and they are doing very good, and they feel very good. But personally, I tell you, my experience, I saw those people. They are not any different from the usual people. They have got the selfishness as other people. They have got the greed as other people. They have the attachment as other people, sometimes more than the other people. Yeah. That means they have not understood the reality of the moment.
Back to your point about other beings or gods or essences, that while we still cling to the idea of a self or someone or being, we will still have the idea of an essence or soul, and we will still have the idea of other beings or gods. It doesn't matter what words or what terms we use it, but I think that while we have the idea of something or someone here, we also have the idea of something or someone there or up high or wherever, and we still look to oneself or other people to, if you like, provide one's salvation or to help one. But when one begins to understand more that in fact all our life is everything we take for being so important are just different moments of seeing and hearing, attachment, aversion, ignorance, harmless, we begin to realize that the idea we have of being or someone, these ideas, concepts, we cling to them. It may make us feel more comforted. That's all right. It doesn't matter. But I think that the more understanding of realities, the more one begins to understand the nature of concepts. But one has to prove it for oneself. And I think that, as Khun Su Chin always says,
one has to be very brave and very courageous to develop understanding and to be sincere to this moment and to really begin to understand realities, because often the realities or the truth of this moment, it's not pleasant, it's not interesting. Maybe what we'd rather do is find some essence or being. So in a way to peel off all those outer layers and see a lot of the outer layers we cling to so much as only concepts, it takes a lot of courage, I think.
Talking of larger forces, it's lunchtime.
That's just the force.
Did you ever have any experience with meditation?
Meditation center or meditation?
Yeah, you know, like I
studied the third collection of the Buddhist scripture first. I didn't go straight to meditation because I'd like to have some understanding of everything I do. I just don't want to follow. So I studied the teachings first.
But you didn't do any meditation in your whole life then, right?
It depends on what you mean by meditation.
Yeah. I guess were you calm your mind? Were you breathing? No breathing, or feeling the vibrations go up and down? Or, close your eyes.
When I'm tired. Even now, I can close my eyes. Yeah, I don't mind closing or opening eyes, but that, because that is not the technique to gain knowledge, there is no technique at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because understanding is not the techniques.
They claim that you can't really understand meditation without Buddhism, and you can't understand Buddhism without meditation.
It depends on what they understand Buddhism. Because for some people, they think that Buddhism is just praying or showing respect to Tripa Jains.
Rituals.
Without understanding of the teachings at all. See? And they say that they have confidence in Buddhism. Without understanding what Buddha understood or taught.
The Thai people generally believe that if they practice the rituals, I mean the regular worshipping in front of the Buddha's image, and they give the alms to the Buddhist monk in the morning, and he says, and they will gain something against this, you know. Okay, they are doing some donation, and they will get some kind of to reduce the killing or to reduce the defilement. Is it true?
It's done out of attachment to fame and gain.
I believe that this is not true, because if it is true, the society as whole should have been much better than before, because they are giving this alms every day more than 100 years. But society has declined, it has not better. You can't say better anyway, you can see only it's going down.
I think that the most important thing is to understand one's own consciousness.
Right.
Because no matter what you are doing, it's done or motivated by consciousness. Mm-hmm. When the consciousness is unwholesome, what you do or what you say is unwholesome.
Yeah, so individuals stay in society. Mm-hmm. Society stay in a country. Is it not a society consciousness or a country's consciousness as a whole, which is totally against the teaching of Buddhism, being a Buddhist country?
Today, what do you think? Is Buddhism prosperous or is it declining?
It's declined.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it is a very disturbing to see all around. Everything's going on against the teachings.
But many people think that Buddhism in Thailand is very prosperous.
No, it is only in the shapes. You can see the monastery, and if I in my life I have built up a temple, and that means I am free of all the defilements now. I am free of killing. That is what is the usual acceptance, usual philosophy in Thailand.
But in the Western countries, it's improving or increasing even.
the numbers of temples are not the measurement for the
prosperity. Temples are not measurement, yeah. Right.
I think the only real measurement is the purity, if you like, of the teaching.
Yeah.
The extent to which it has not been adulterated or corrupted by wrong interpretation and wrong teaching.
Right.
By those who have the task of carrying the teaching.
Right, yeah, this is perfectly all right, you know, that teaching should be pure, not adulterated. But how do we know that it has been adulterated or not? I mean, it's just coming on from the some source and coming down, and we are told this thing. Okay, sometimes we doubt what is written there, but sometimes we have no right to doubt it. It's like people just take it as a granted. All right, whatever written is, all right, fine.
Well, there are still, in a large part, the teachings still remain, the text, the Tipitaka, the source. So whatever one hears from whatever teachers, or be they monks or otherwise, one can check it with the teaching to see if it's consistent with what is said to have been taught by the Buddha himself originally. And one can also test it oneself against one's own experience.
If we are talking about seeing now, is this true?
Talking about seeing.
And hearing and thinking and hardness and everything that appear now, is it true? Is it truth?
Or I'm doubtful. I think it may be partly true, maybe not true.
Why? Because seeing sees now.
Because I have been studying many things, you know, in my life. And I have come to the conclusion what you see today is not really true. But I think it's true. So I'm in doubt. I'm doubting even my own ability to understand things, whether they're root, whether true or
yes,
not true.
But we won't talk about concept after seeing. We just talk about the seeing itself now. If we talk more about seeing to understand it, it's not self, it's just a moment of experiencing visible object. Are we talking about the truth of reality?
No. We are not talking about the truth. We are just seeing the things as they appear. Sometimes we think they are true, sometimes we think it's not true. But if we know the reality as we would like to know, then perhaps we have better vision and it can come to the conclusion better way. Say, we can understand things better way.
Can we also understand life when we understand seeing, hearing, thinking, feeling?
Understand life?
Life, yes.
Do we understand the life? Okay, very complicated maybe. No, we don't understand the life.
If we understand seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, thinking, feeling,
yeah.
Don't we understand life?
Maybe not.
Will understanding those things help us to understand?
Because we believe this is the part of the life, but this is not the life. Life may be still something else.
What do we take for life? What is it that we take for life?
We don't know it. As a matter of fact, I am ignorant. As a simple human being, I do a simple act, sensory act, all right? But we still don't know. I still don't know. What's life all about is?
No, but is the moment of sensory experience, for example, can we say that is...
But that is not a life, of course. I know this thing from my background, because I'm a Hindu. I know this is not a life, sure. But there is something else.
What is that something else?
I want to know.
Shall we know what appears now first?
Yes, okay.
So that we know that there is nothing besides this.
There is nothing besides this.
Thinking that there might be something, but when it does not appear at all at this moment, we only keep on thinking that there might be something, there might be something, while there is many things now appear through six hours. In order to know whether there is something else, there should be more understanding of this moment to be sure whether there is or there is nothing at this moment.
What is seeing should not be more precise what seeing is and what hearing is. Seeing is not the same as knowing what something is that is seen. Only the seeing.
Seeing is only seeing. Seeing is not knowing.
Through eye sense only.
Okay, all right.
Hearing.
So when we just use the eye sense. We don't...
But don't think about it. Not yet.
Don't think about it.
Not yet.
No? Not yet. Oh, I see. Step by step. Okay.
Yeah.
So first step is seeing. As it is. As it is or as it appears to be. All right?
Yeah.
And don't know it.
Is it easy to understand seeing as it is?
Is it easy to see the...
To understand seeing as it is?
No explanation, no words, no language. You see just what you see. Is that...
Yeah,
understanding.
Course. Okay. You can see it. Okay, yeah, fine. Seeing is believing. Okay.
No explanation.
No building.
No explanation.
You don't see a building, only color. The object of seeing.
Yeah, okay.
Color.
See color, all right.
Or visible object, you can call it visible object.
Yeah.
You don't see a person. You don't see a person.
Yeah.
Because it's not seeing. When you define something, it's not seeing, but thinking.
Mm-hmm. The thing is very much related to thinking. I think if you look from a frame point of view, you can't separate seeing and thinking.
Like we cannot separate seeing from hearing now, but they are different.
No, it's different, I would say.
Yeah. Seeing is different from hearing.
You can see without
yes.
hearing.
Right.
Yeah.
So you cannot see without thinking, supposedly.
But even now at this moment, it seems like seeing and hearing arise together or appear together. But in reality, they are different. It's the same as seeing and thinking at the moment of seeing.
I mean, if you look in the optical way, how you see something, it's related to your brain. If you take your brain away, you cannot see anything. It's very easy, but you can take your ears away and you see a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really speak
yeah.
about seeing now,
yeah.
if we speak about seeing as a kind of, let's say, dharma word, then maybe it's different. Yeah? But if you speak about seeing, it's the optical activity of seeing. It's not possible without brain. You can't do it.
Without brain?
Without brain, right.
Brain, yeah.
Brain.
The brain is part of the body. But what we call thinking is defining and thinking about something. But now you talk about the brain function, the function of the brain.
Yeah, but that's why it's linked together, seeing and thinking.
Yeah.
Technique-wise.
But what we call thinking, we should define that too.
How about if we talk hearing, for example, would you find it easy to accept that the moment of the hearing of the sound is different from thinking about the sound that is heard?
Look, I know what you mean. You can say that the hearing is separate. But it's very difficult if you separate complex relationships to special parts. You can say now in this moment I'm just hearing, yeah. Something and this hearing is separate. Say like this. I mean, we had this discussion yesterday.
I don't think we're quite saying that. I think what we're saying is that we know that sound waves contact the eardrum, we'll say, just for argument's sake. At that moment of contact, there cannot be any knowledge of the source of the sound. I mean, if one hears a dog bark or a whatever, at the moment of the contact, sound of the ear, when that sound is perceived through that ear, there isn't any attribution.
Yeah, sure. This way you need for every sense, you need the thinking.
Yeah. So...
But the seeing is a little bit different.
But you mean
yeah.
the brain? When you say thinking, you mean the function of the brain?
No, the visualization of pictures. I mean, you can program your seeing that you're seeing just opposite everything. Example. So
yeah.
this you would not consider as a normal seeing.
I see your point. Yeah.
You see it?
I understand.
I understand.
I understand. She hears it's difficult.
You see, there's a complexity.
It is difficult because the absolute reality, there's the conventional reality and there is the absolute reality. And these two are different, but they should not be against each other, yeah, of course. Right. So what you just say, when we read articles, scientific articles, it is sometimes difficult. You may wonder how. I do too. I wrote to Sarah about it, the sound waves and the brain. It is difficult.
May I ask, what are there in your body?
Pardon? What are in my body?
Yeah. Please.
In my body?
You talk about brain and many things, so what are there in your body?
Which way? You mean like no. organs or like...
Yeah.
Your body have many things inside.
Yeah. What are they?
What are they?
Parts of my body.
What are they?
I mean, look, they have a kind of activity which I judge and which I try to understand.
So in your body?
Different levels. If you ask me now, what is it?
In your body?
I can say it's some organ which is functioning by itself.
Like?
I can say like the heart or like the brain.
Yeah, teeth and intestine and heart and lung.
Yeah.
May I say that it's only a heap of dust?
Heap of dust?
Heap.
Just dust.
Pile.
So a pile of dust.
Pile of dust.
Yeah.
And some water. Okay. I would agree.
Okay.
Yeah. From some extent, yes. From some other extent, not. Because if you just put some pile of dust together, you will not get a brain, actually.
Not necessary to call it brain or heart or lung or blood. Ooh. Because there are spaces in between, very, very tiny, that it can be broken into very small pieces. So instead of saying it's brain or heart or lung, we can say that it's only pile or stack or heap of dust.
Particles.
Because everything needs solidity. Like heat cannot just stay alone without solidity, the four primary elements.
Why you not say energy? Why you call it particles? I mean, particles is a kind of substance. But it is not a substance necessarily.
When you touch, it's hard, so I would use very simple word that anyone can understand. No matter you touch what part of your body, you touch hardness only.
But if you want to touch something, you will get the result of the touching. If you want to see something, you will get the result of the seeing. So you get different results, what you do. If you look, you get a different result from this, what you touch.
If there is no body sense, hardness cannot appear. So in the body, there are body sense almost all over the body. So you can touch hardness. So I don't use the difficult term, just hardness that everyone can experience. And hardness is an element. And there is not only hardness in one tiny rupa, a group. There are more. 8 rupas together. Is this right or wrong? Because I don't talk about brain or anything which is very complicated.
Can you please repeat it?
Just about the thing that anyone can experience through body sense. What we take for the body when we touch is only hardness, softness, heat or cold, vibration or motion. Yeah.
So,
if we would forget the terms like brain and heart, and we use just simple word like hardness.
What about the idea though that some research indicates that our brain could be in several places in our body? Now, the old theory is, you know, the brain's all here, you know, the mind's all here.
No matter what you call it,
what?
When you touch, it's hard.
What?
No
when
matter
you touch, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. Well, okay, but the heart or whatever, the brain, whatever is. Supposedly distributed in several parts of our body, according to some research they're doing now. And also the fact that we usually think in pictures. And so how does this fit in if we're looking at this moment, this instant moment, and trying to get right understanding that it's not only our brain up here, but it's our brain through our body, and also that we're thinking in pictures. Like you said, I see, you know, we're very visually oriented. We usually picture something based on what we smell, what we hear, what we, you know, say, and so forth. And so how does this affect right understanding? This would imply that internally the process in our mind would have to change the picture or do some, or interpret the picture differently if we think in pictures.
But there's also an impingement of just color.
What?
Before there is a picture.
Before there is a picture.
Yeah, and at that moment, the seeing. So also the optical things that you talked about, it's rather complicated, but there is also a moment of only the color impinging. Or when the room is so dark, even then there is some impingement of something, of color. It's dark. And that's seeing.
When one was newly born, there's no brain yet, right?
When you're newly born,
you have a brain.
First moment of life.
Oh, no.
First moment of life.
You have some instincts.
No, not yet. Too small.
Just, your baby.
No
eye,
small.
No eye, no ear yet.
Wait a minute,
in
you
the
mean
mother's womb,
conception.
I mean.
Conception.
So still
conception. Conception. Then it's too small. No brain.
But there's consciousness. There can be the feeling through the body sense with our brain yet.
That's what he mentioned. These are different ways.
Okay.
That's what you mentioned, that there are different ways to recognize something, not only by brain.
Yeah, right. Evidently, they're finding that there's the brains in the arms and at different other points in the body that are, you know, capable of the same brain type function. And they can also discover this through medical research, that, you know, parts of brains are removed, other parts take over, you know. And that also that we usually think in pictures anyway. So too often I think we're thinking of, you know, all these different sensory things giving us message to our brain. This may not be true. In the sense, or heart, you know, as we say, that this may not exactly be true, because there might be other parts of our body, according to the latest medical research, that's also picking up and also making decisions,
yes,
and also deciding,
yeah,
what's right or wrong understanding.
Yeah.
And so as a consequence, there's also the possibility that if we're looking at pictures, the pictures basically are wrong, see? Because the awareness and the right awareness, right understanding, would imply that our pictures are correct. But if our pictures are incorrect, and wrong understanding,
but
then we have to change our pictures.
We don't worry now about all these pictures and things like that. It's so simple that there is a moment of seeing only color, and hearing only sound, and that there are different impressions, they are different.
You mean color?
Yes.
But some people might see black and white.
It doesn't matter at all.
Okay.
See? So the absolute truth is very basic, and we don't have to worry about the different details of the different medical science and discoveries.
But color is only one of those things.
It's not
right?
About the medical discoveries.
Yeah, but what about the color is only one element, right? Like we have like maybe a sort of a greenish book here.
Yeah.
That's only one element. It's also has other features that I can touch, heart, you know.
Yeah, color is always together with heart.
What?
Hardness, with element, different elements.
Yeah, right.
It's together, it's hardness. It arises together,
but
alone color.
But it's more than color, though.
Yeah, but what you see, that is the strange thing, you know. There are different elements there. There's hardness, there's smell, there's even flavor. These are basic rupas or bodily phenomena. And one of them is color, but there is something very strange actually. That's only that color, very tiny, can impinge on the eye sense, and then there can be a condition for seeing. So color is a bodily phenomenon or physical phenomenon. Eye sense is a physical phenomenon. The two meet, and then there is a condition for seeing, which is mental. At nose, it's seeing knows. It knows color. So it's mental.
But how would you change all this to the wrong understanding to the right understanding?
If you understand this, you can prove it. You can prove it.
You can prove it.
Yeah, that only color is seen, no matter what color, no matter green or red, you can prove that it is seen. And you can prove that sound is heard. And you can prove that seeing is not the same as hearing. And if there was not one moment of consciousness at here in the eye sense originating, and another moment originating in the ear, but if everything would be only brain, you would not know that there are differences. It would be only brain function, only brain, and you would not know all these things.
May I explain some example? How to see without thinking? You said that seeing and thinking never depart.
Stay together.
Yes, stay together all the time.
Actually, thinking is already there in seeing.
When we say thinking and seeing, you go together.
When we say seeing or hearing, touching, whatever we say, the thinking is already inside. It's an integral part of all this functions.
Okay. Then you would have
we can't stop thinking. Do you believe it?
No, it's just auto. It's auto, automatic functioning. I mean, you don't realize you're thinking, but it has to be there.
Yeah, we can stop the automation of that.
Okay, we can stop it. Okay, fine.
But then you have two chittas, two consciousness, thinking and seeing. It's not possible. Only one at a time.
Yeah, well, that auto is there, so we don't say that we are thinking. We see only we are seeing.
But not at the same moment. They go so fast, these moments. It only seems at the same time, but they are interspersed in between so fast. And
actually,
then you think
when you see,
you see.
The thinking of seeing is just momentary. But after you have seen and you start analyzing it, then that thinking is different.
Okay. We cannot stop any thinking because it's conditioned.
No, we can't stop.
No,
you can practice now.
We cannot stop seeing, we cannot stop thinking, we cannot stop.
If you are seeing and thinking at the same time, you cannot see the real things.
One of my friends was a monk. He was a Peace Corps monk. He's a Peace Corps and he joined the American monk here in Thailand.
Yeah.
And there was one monk at this monastery that decided he wasn't going to think anymore. So he meditated on not thinking.
I heard that before, yeah.
Yeah, and he went crazy.
People say, believe that only.
Yeah, right.
They believe that they can stop thinking.
Yeah,
but why do you want to stop thinking? Why do you want to stop
thinking? Very easy, stop thinking.
But why do you want to stop thinking?
What's the use?
Because
what's
we want to experience the real things. When we add the thinking to it, it's not real.
You see, whether you see or not see, you have to think. Thinking always there.
So, with thinking, so you can touch the real thing.
What about thinking? Is it real?
But isn't
thinking
true?
Is real too.
But thinking is real.
But sometimes you cannot force yourself.
You think with language.
Language
is the man-made, it's not nature.
Nobody can.
We can say that when we are seeing, we are thinking
we
about seeing
the thinking
only.
Side.
Okay.
We can ignore
all
the
right.
thinking
We can't think something else. But we
not
we
think,
simply think seeing only.
Not think, just experience what you see.
Can you create thinking?
People who are trained to create thinking.
No.
But they are not trained to stop thinking.
No.
That's why what
you think
a problem, too much thinking.
By conditions, nobody can create thinking. Like you cannot create seeing. You cannot create hearing. There are conditions for seeing, thinking as well. Without conditions, they cannot be seeing, hearing, or thinking. So it's one's own thought that one thinks that one can create thinking. Thought is the object of thinking. But thinking is uncontrollable.
Yeah, uncontrollable, right. You have to think all the time.
And if you think, you can create.
Think and stop.
It's
you
can't
think and stop.
Itself, if you think that you can create it,
the mind is working non-stop all the time. It has to think something.
And it's like you're saying that one reality is more worthy than another. Why is seeing more worthy than thinking? They're different realities. How about begin to understand whatever reality is in condition instead of trying to make it this one and not that one? What's the use?
But isn't one of the aspects of Buddhism and Dharma, which supposedly means among other things, good. Isn't one of those things to maybe change our thinking so we can supposedly be more or have more right understanding to live, you know, with right conduct and, you know, the Eightfold Path and everything? Because otherwise we would pretty much stay the way we are. And one of the big things, like in my case, I'm very concerned with changing my thinking personally as well as for the environment.
So there's, you know, but right,
so it's changing thinking is a big concern, I think, if we were.
So there's right thinking and wrong thinking, useful thinking and useless thinking. So hearing useful things now will be a condition for useful reflection later, we hope. But in between, like even if we're, while we're having this discussion now, who can stop thinking about what's going to be for dinner or some other topics? Impossible to stop it.
These are more compulsive, obsessive type thoughts, aren't they?
Yeah. So
I mean, they're kind of like coming up, you know?
They do.
Whatever kind of thinking is conditioned. Whatever kind of thinking it is at this moment is conditioned. So hearing useful things, considering useful things, is a condition for more useful thinking. But there have also been so many conditions for useless thinking. So
chatter, if you will.
Chatter, okay. But if we have the idea that we can stop it or we should stop it, it's all the idea with self who wants to change.
But in meditation, I've noticed this has stopped a lot. Temporarily. But when I meditate, I stop a lot of my thinking and I feel close to nature and all that.
Yeah, can you stop the arising of consciousness?
Do I stop the arising and falling? No, I think that still goes on, but it doesn't come up with a lot of chatter. Or less chatter.
With understanding.
Or the chatter's way down. I've turned it down.
And you made it so you have reduced the volume.
What?
You reduce the volume.
Yeah, reduce the volume.
But it's still there.
You know, no, but I also feel closer to nature. Like when I'm walking in the forest, a lot of my chatter, I mean, some ideas will come, but I'm basically very calm. And,
yeah, but you say it's temporarily. You say temporarily.
What?
Temporarily, it's for some time. Afterward, it'll come back to you.
Yeah, and a lot of times it'll come back later.
And that's not the Buddha's way, because the Buddha's way is to eradicate absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Is it possible that Daniel meditates quite often and very regularly until the day the clutter is gone, totally gone, absolutely?
It depends on what is meditation he's meditating and what is the understanding that he gets. If he doesn't get any understanding, I cannot say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of understanding just automatically occurs when you meditate, when you keep your mind and body calm enough.
But that's not the goal of meditation or development of understanding. It just...
But it's a passageway, because if my mind's racing around a mile a minute, I can't really...
It can be object of attachment all the time.
Yeah.
You are attached to such state of mind.
Attached to what?
Such state of mind.
State of mind. Oh, state of mind, yeah.
You want to reach it.
You want to get it. You see, doctors say meditate and get well. Why? Because you will relax. So this is attachment. Oh, I want to become well, so I can practice meditation. But then after, what happened? How about the wisdom? How about the knowledge? Do you get it?
Maybe it's in the background, but it might be there.
Maybe it might be there.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think better come back. I train you. Just a few seconds, you can stop your thinking.
But I don't want to stop.
It's up to you. But